All right, I guess we're ready. All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol on September 2nd, 10 a.m., for the regularly scheduled meeting of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'll call this meeting to order. And I actually am going to part with any opening comments. I don't have any opening comments this morning, so I'll turn it over to my colleague, Commissioner Christman.
Too busy with 2 days of hearings leading up to this and then quickly trying to prepare for a meeting with quite a few agenda items, so I don't have any planned opening comments either.
Short-winded today. It's all up to you.
All right. Well, do I have till 10:15, Madam Chair? I didn't get a chance last meeting because we were so busy, just to thank both of you for helping out when I was gone on the China trip. I'll probably put together something for that.
You're too jet-lagged to remember.
I know, right? I was kind of wiped out. But there's a lot of lessons, I think, that I got out of that trip that will apply to these CO2 rules as they come forward and all this rhetoric about all the, quote, great things going on in China. I mean, it's a whole different scenario what I saw than what some folks paint. So I think that's something that I'm actually working on an op-ed for that, too. But I'd like to talk to you more about, both of you, about how we're going to deal with the whole 111D stuff. So that's that. For the staff, I always say thank you for all your great work, but today I have to share my pet peeve. Whoever takes the last cup of coffee and doesn't fill, today I draw the line. I've gone to hold of the Attorney General's office. We're having it dusted for prints. All right. So if you have questions on how to make the next cup of coffee, I can show you. All right. I'm just saying.
Well, but if you leave, you know, a centimeter in the bottom, then
no,
it's not gone.
No, that's what people do. They leave like two little millimeters or milliliters in the bottom, and they say, oh, it's fine. Then the next guy comes and has two drops. It's a rule of thumb. If there's not a full cup. Madam Chair, that's all I have.
I already told you I don't drink that coffee except for on hearing days occasionally,
so
don't blame me.
Did you take the last cup today?
Not today.
Not today.
Today is a commission meeting. hearing days. I will take coffee from there. Otherwise, I bring it from home.
All right, I'll get our young attorney on this if we have to. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I will say that I have never been guilty of drinking the last cup of coffee and leaving the pot empty.
Because you never drink
coffee. I've never drank a cup of coffee in my life, so.
All right. Well, you might have to do a breathalyzer to prove that. It sounds like things are getting serious here.
Getting serious today.
Okay. So, moving on, we have a number of items on the consent agenda. I move passage of those items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Moving on to the regular agenda, I have two items. Uh-oh. One of them is missing.
Here you go.
No, I have notes on it. Oh, here it is. It's right here. Misplaced.
Probably the same person that took the last cup of coffee.
Okay. JF1, I move the commission deem complete the applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit, and further move the commission issue a notice of filings and public hearing in Highland Crude LLC, Alexander Tank Farm, Crude Oil Pipeline, McKinsey, citing application case number PU-15-486.
Second.
This is another segment of the Market Center pipeline that we cited last year for Highland. This is a 4.5-mile, 8-inch diameter crude oil gathering line and associated facilities that Highland wants to transfer to a transmission line. The line is located in McKenzie County, North Dakota, and it will the Alexander Tank Farm crude oil pipeline originates 5 miles north to northwest of Alexander, and then it connects with Highland's Market Center system and runs 5.5 miles to the north to Highland's Alexander station. So it's a short line. They want to convert it to a transmission line. This line was under construction when we were having our hearing on the bigger Market Center pipeline system, which was also a conversion. Now they're done constructing it. They're operating it as a gathering line today and want to convert it to a transmission line. It is a relatively short line, and it is under construction, and it's already completed. There's no new construction at all associated with this application. And the company had asked for us to waive the hearing requirement entirely. And we had a lot of deliberations with a number of attorneys, including the attorney on this case, which is Mitch. And Mitch Armstrong, who also did the previous Market Center system siting case. And we determined that really that's an area that the commission has not very often, if ever, gone down waiving the entire public hearing notice for an entirely new corridor certificate and route permit, recognizing that a corridor certificate gives them the opportunity to put additional facilities within that same corridor, really demands us to continue with our process and give them, you know, the full hearing. So as a somewhat of a compromise, what I'm proposing with this is that we do the hearing with the substantive ALJ. It simplifies the schedule, simplifies the hearing process, and probably allows the hearing to be scheduled sooner than what would be available with us through our schedule and a hearing officer and all the attorneys. It just gets more complicated and cumbersome the more people get in. But in light of the fact that this is already constructed, there's no new construction, and it's under 5 miles in length, I felt that an ALJ would be appropriate to propose in this hearing. So the hearing is scheduled for October 7th. At Teddy's Residential Suites in Watford City, pending my colleague's agreement with this approach.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add, I think that's a great choice, Commissioner. I'm a big fan of using the ALJs because they give their more flexibility to the three of us through the broader issues. Mm-hmm. And quite honestly, when the ALJ does the hearing, it doesn't really – we still have the ultimate say on the order. They'll develop the draft order. The ALJs are very, very familiar with all the questions that we ask. I think this is a perfect example of something 4 miles. And I quite honestly think we should be using the ALJs a little more for some of this. Because when we bring the whole commission out there for 2-3 miles, it just seems like there's other things that we should be focusing on. That because the ALJs do a good job, so I completely agree with you.
I'm not sure we should be doing it more often, but I sure am in favor of trying it on this one and see how it works out and learn from it.
Okay.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay. And then JF2, thanks to Julie Prescott for getting this on the agenda late. She did ask last week if anybody needed a work session. Nobody must have expressed any need for that. And so we're moving forward with this order relatively quickly after the hearing. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order in Vantage Pipeline US LP 8-inch HVP Pipeline West Spur Pipeline Project Siting Application Case Number PU-15-142.
Second.
So on April 13th, Vantage Pipeline US LP filed applications for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit concerning approximately 47 miles of 8-inch diameter steel high vapor pressure ethane pipeline and associated facilities known as West Spur Lateral Pipeline Project in Divide and Williams Counties, North Dakota. On June 3rd, the commission found the applications complete, deemed them complete, and set the hearing for August 13th in Williston. On August 13th, the hearing was held as scheduled. The project will originate at One Oak Partners LP State Line Gas Plant located near Williston in Williams County and will transport liquid ethane to an interconnect with Vantage's existing ethane pipeline near Stady in Divide County. It's a 47-mile route. The maximum capacity of the project will be 30,000 barrels per day. The normal capacity will be about 26,000 barrels per day. The total anticipated cost of the project is $20 million. Vantage testified there's a need for the project to deliver liquid ethane for sale to markets in Alberta, Canada, to be used as feedstock in the production of a wide range of consumer and industrial projects. They also indicated that the project will provide needed takeaway capacity for ethane, thereby helping to reduce regional flaring of natural and ethane gas. Vantage indicated that the volatile nature of ethane restricts its transport by truck and rail, particularly over international borders, and therefore the project provides the safest and most economical option for transporting ethane to available markets. The company contacted 20 state, federal, and local agencies, including the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, North Dakota Game and Fish, North Dakota Department of Health, and the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office. Most of those agencies replied in letters that they did not have any issues with this line. North Dakota Game and Fish indicated that the project should not have any significant adverse effects on wildlife or wildlife habitat, including species of conservation priority. Parks and Rec indicated that it will not affect any state parklands and that no documented occurrences of species of concern or other significant ecological communities are known to occur within the study area. And the North Dakota State Historic Preservation Office concurred with the no significant sites affected determinations of the project. There were 65 cultural resources sites identified. Six of those were located within the proposed construction right-of-way. One of those was determined not to be eligible for listing on the National Register of Historic Places, and the other five the Vantage has committed to protecting by fencing, providing a buffer, and boring under three of those sites. Vantage said testified that there are no residences, schools, or places of business within 500 feet of the proposed route, and the route does not cross any avoidance areas. They've committed to protecting the integrity of wetlands and water bodies by boring where standing water is present by using best practice management practices, which include minimizing the footprint of environmental disturbances and length of time for construction through the wetlands and water bodies. Vantage testified that a SCADA system with an uninterruptible power supply will be installed as part of the project, and operations will be monitored 24/7 from a control center in Alberta, Canada. They also testified that the project will be constructed, maintained, and operated according to Title 49, Part 195 of the Code of Federal Regulations, which really outlines the safest manner for constructing and operating pipelines. And Vantage has agreed to use the NDSU Extension Service publication Successful Reclamation of Lands Disturbed by Oil and Gas Development and Infrastructure Construction as a guide for best reclamation practices in constructing this project. So in summary, this is really one of the cleanest applications for a pipeline and one of the most smooth-running hearings that we've really had for a pipeline project. It's a 47 miles, 8-inch pipeline. They had 100% of the easements secured in advance of the hearing, which is, I think, might be the first time I've seen that, especially in a line of this length. They had consulted and received comments from all the necessary agencies. They expressed a lot of commitment to reclamation and a lot of knowledge in terms of how to construct in the conditions in North Dakota and do so in a way that will restore the land to its previous state. It was really an open and thorough discussion. I felt really good about it, and the project is another piece of the long-term solution on flaring. While this project doesn't result in the directly in more gas being captured, it does add more value to the gas. It provides a market for the ethane stream in the gas, which helps producers earn more and long-term will provide an incentive for producers for capturing gas and using the ethane stream. So I hope that this is a good project. It serves the markets up in Alberta. I do hope that we see similar projects like this, capturing the ethane and piping it to a North Dakota petrochemical facility in the near future, as it's a really important piece of the long-term diversification of this industry and use of our very solid natural gas resources right here in North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I just wanted to add, thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak. I liked the way you got the order. I'll finish that, especially at the very end, number six, the order paragraph, reminding them to comply with all appropriate laws, rules, and regulations if they invent to do different type of transmission facilities in the corridor. That's, I think, a recent addition, and I think it's a good one.
So I want to – I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm sure – thanks, JP, too. I'm sure you had a hand in this, too.
I just wanted to highlight something that you pointed out, that they had all their easements acquired when the application came in. And this is not something that's set around here for a year. You know, it was only 2-3 months ago. It appeared they had just acquired the initial approvals to do the walkthrough on the property. So it didn't imply in the initial application that they probably had any easements at that time. So they've acquired these in a relatively short period of time in the heart of the oil patch, too. So it really is commendable.
Yeah. It was clear that these folks are committed to building good pipelines, and that starts with good landowner relations. So I think that hopefully that optimism will bear out in a really solid project.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Christman.
I have quite a few items in my portfolio. So RC1, I move the commission approve revision number 30 to surface coal mining permit NACT-8503. Held by Coteau Properties Company to delete 32.271 acres from the permit that have not been disturbed by mining activities.
Second.
On April 9th, Coteau Properties filed this revision to delete 35 acres of land from the permit that have not been affected by surface coal mining and reclamation operations. The land is being deleted from the permit because it was not disturbed, and it will be used by Dakota Gasification Company for activities associated with the construction of their urea plant. Reclamation Division staff inspected the acreage proposed for the deletion on April 23rd to verify that the parcel had not been disturbed. After that inspection, the acreage proposed for deletion was changed from 35 to 32 acres, as it was determined that a small acreage was disturbed by mining-related activities. On July 8th, Coteau modified Revision 30 to delete exactly 32.271 acres from the permit. The parcel being deleted from the permit can generally be described as located in the northwest quarter of the southwest quarter of Section 30, Township 145 North, Range 87 West. This revision application was considered an insignificant revision application, but requires commission approval before the acreage deletion. No bond adjustment is necessary as a result of this revision, and because this is non-disturbed acres, I don't have anything to report as far as advertisements in local papers or with the landowners groups. That's not necessary in these cases.
We have a motion, a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-642, canceling warehouse license number 1222, issued to Identity Preserved Ingredients, LLC, at Hillsboro, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Hillsboro is discontinued.
Second.
The licensing division received the request to discontinue from Identity Preserved Ingredients. IPI was sold to and will be licensed by Anchor Ingredients Company, LLC.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-626, granting the request of Anchor Ingredients Company, LLC, to operate a 366,000 bushel grain warehouse at Hillsboro, North Dakota.
Second.
Anchor Ingredients filed this application to operate the warehouse at Hillsboro that I mentioned. Anchor Ingredients purchased the Hillsboro facility from Identity Preserved Ingredients, as was mentioned in the previous agenda item. They're going to process pearled barley, peas, flaxseed, chickpeas, oat groats, organics, and other specialty crops for food and pet markets. Anchor Ingredients is part owned by Arthur Companies that most of us are familiar with. Anchor Ingredients notified the commission it has not operated as a grain warehouseman at Hillsboro. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends a license be issued. I will just point out purled barley, if anyone is wondering, is barley where the hull and the bran have been removed. And makes it more easily cooked, more easily chewed, that sort of thing. Oat groats is hulled, but the bran remains, and basically it's whole grain then.
I'm glad you explained oat groats, because I was going to ask you what it was. The second meeting in a row we've talked about oat groats. I've used pearled barley before, but not oat groats. Do people eat oat groats, or is this for pet food?
No, I think that that's...
Oat groats.
My understanding of it is that that's the whole grain then.
Is it the... The oat, what do they call that?
Oats, having the bran on there.
The oatmeal that is steel cut. Is that what this is? Oat groats?
I'm not familiar with the term steel cut, but my understanding is, and whether it's, I mean, in this case we're talking oats, but groats in the various products, if the bran stays on, that's when it's whole grain, I believe.
Doesn't sound very appetizing to me, but that's why.
Probably why they use other terms than
groats. Steel cut might be more appealing if that's what this is. Somebody was smart.
The marketing department nixed groats from the whole conversation.
We have a motion and second for further discussion.
You don't have any Webster, North Dakota history for us?
No, I don't.
Do you know where Webster, North Dakota is at?
That's the next one, but yes, it's over there by Devil's Lake.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-638, granting the request of American Bean LLC of Oslo, Minnesota, to operate a 184,000 bushel grain warehouse at Webster, North Dakota.
Second.
American Bean is licensing this location to receive dry edible beans. They notified the commission they have not operated as a grain warehouseman at Webster in that it has not received any grain. American Bean operates licensed grain warehouses at Cummings, Grand Forks, Petersburg, and Sharon, and with the addition of Webster will have a combined capacity of 1,339,000 bushels. Statutory compliance has been met. Staff recommends the license be issued. And since it was requested, I'll tell you two things on Webster. Webster, South Dakota is the hometown of my wonderful sister-in-law. And Webster, North Dakota is the hometown of former Senator Byron Langley, who served for a long time, and I got to serve one term with him back in 1995.
I have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC5, I move the commission amend the order granting license application in Thompson's USA Limited Grain Warehouse, Northwood, North Dakota. License application case number GE-15-639.
Second.
On August 24th, the commission adopted an order granting this license application. The order named Thompson as the grain warehouse location and ordered that the request to operate a 130,000 bushel grain warehouse at Thompson, North Dakota, is granted. So this motion, an amended order granting the license application, reflect the correct grain warehouse location of Northwood, North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? I see none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Sorry about the little snafu from last meeting, but we have it right now. RC6, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-641, granting the request of North Dakota Bean LLC to operate a 192,000 bushel grain warehouse at Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Second.
North Dakota Bean will purchase and process dry edible beans in North Dakota. The applicant notified the commission. let me get to that in a moment. I'll say statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the license be issued. I will say this is one that I did a temporary approval on earlier, and I put that on for discussion, these temporary approvals, for later on in the admin meeting. In this case, the applicant had notified us that there was a grower with a load of beans waiting to unload, but they did the correct thing and didn't accept anything until they had their temporary license approved. And this will make it permanent, or at least annually.
You have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC7, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-643 granting the request of SRS Commodities Limited of Mayville, North Dakota to operate a 270,000 bushel grain warehouse at Portland Rural and a 164,000 bushel grain warehouse at Portland, North Dakota.
Second.
Both these facilities were purchased from Mayport Farmers Co-op in September of last year. The commission approved Mayport Farmers Co-op's request to discontinue business at the Portland Rural Warehouse. Then in July of this year, we approved Mayport Farmers Co-op's request to discontinue business for their Portland Bean Warehouse. This new licensee notified the commission it has not received any beans at either of these locations and wants to license the locations should they need to receive dry edible beans during harvest. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just a question, I guess. It just seems like we got a lot of these in the northeastern part of the state, and I'm guessing that's just a trend, but it'll be interesting. I know you're coming up with the grain statistics, which I'm excited for, but I guess I'm assuming that most of our elevator storage is in the eastern part of the state.
Well, certainly even the majority of it, you know, it's just more productive farmland, and almost all the land is farmed as opposed to the amount of pasture and other uses we have out west. And of course, the national parks and stuff take acreage out of the west side of the state. So, yes, the grain storage licensed is pretty strong in the east.
It's funny we get most of the questions on rail capacity in the west, but I suppose once they get it moving, then it's not a problem. But yep. Thanks.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And RC8, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-15-6337 granting the request of FC Stone Merchant Services LLC to operate a 58,000 bushel grain warehouse at Northwood, North Dakota.
Second.
FC Stone Merchant Services will purchase grain for crushing into oil. The licensee notified the commission is not operated as a grain warehouseman at Northwood. Statutory compliance has been met. Staff recommends approval. I do want to point out some things on this particular case, if I can find my notes on it here. Some of the law changes we made on bonding last spring all fall into play here. And so I think it's important to note how this works out. This is a canola facility. And under the old bonding statutes, it's a 58,000 bushel facility. They'd have had a $50,000 bond needed. All the new aspects we put into the bonding laws come into play here. So they would have been 50,000. Now, because they're new, operating within their first 7 years, and that's when we've had problems the most likely with facilities, we added a 30% increase. So that's another 15,000 a bond necessary. That brings it up to 65,000. We also determined that because there can just be so many losses in places that deal in high volume, anyone who deals in more than seven times their capacity has to add an additional 20 cents per bushel for that amount that exceeds seven times their capacity. This is a 58,000 bushel facility that projects purchasing over 3 million bushels a year. They're going to purchase their capacity in less than a week, 52 weeks out of the year. So you can imagine, under the old regime, if they were buying that volume, processing it, and not paying within 45 days, how much the losses could have added up by the time anyone would even have a complaint they could make here. So I think, again, that's a good change. The 20 cents on the extra capacity added $540,000 to their bond needs, so it went from 65 to 605,000. But then we also added the other provision where they could get a 30% discount if they committed to paying within 10 days instead of 45 days. A voluntary option on their part. They've done that. This means that if they're running late and not paying their farmers, we'll probably get a notice much earlier before the victim list adds up. But by doing that, they reduced their bond by 30%, over $181,000, brings their bond back down then to 423.5. I think this is a prime example of our new regime working very well to get the proper amounts of bond in place.
And we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just want to applaud you for all the work you did to develop those new bonding levels and really thinking through how to focus on the areas where the greatest concern and greatest losses are. It was not a, you know, shotgun approach. It was a rifle approach and trying to really focus on those. And I think that you're to be commended for that, you and Sue and the whole licensing team. One question on this, because of the 10-day commitment, I would assume our inspectors will be out there sort of early on to see how the company's doing on that 10-day commitment and making sure that they're standing true to what they've committed to doing in the turnaround of that.
We haven't discussed a specific inspection schedule, but yes, that will be one of the things they'll have in mind when they inspect this place, that they're not watching for tickets that are 45 or 50 days old. They're watching for tickets that are 11 days old and there's no evidence of payments yet. Yeah. And if there are, it's a violation. Mm-hmm. And thank you. Your point is appreciated, and especially on behalf of the staff. You know, I just haven't been here that long, and boy, staff really worked to provide me a lot of information to figure out where the vulnerabilities were. And not that we can ever probably make everything 100% safe, but I think we've went a long ways in propping up our most vulnerable situations.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And lastly, and this is nothing that I think needs a vote or anything, but I did want to point out that Sue completed the grain elevator statistics. They've been available for a little while, but I wanted a little time to go over them and look at them and learn from. So these are August 1st statistics based on our annual licensing renewal cycle. And the growth patterns remain the same, but as the numbers get bigger year after year, or in the case of licensees, smaller, it just seems like it's almost more dramatic. From 2014 to 2015, we went from about 1.067 million bushels to almost 1.2 million bushels of capacity in the state. And this is just the licensed capacity. You can drive around in rural areas and you'll see farmers with enormous grain storage facilities and dryers and everything else. So the state's overall capacity, of course, is much larger. I mean, this is just the licensed. But while we have that growth in capacity, we actually have, it's about a 7% increase in licensed capacity. We actually have 5% fewer state licensed elevators. And so the size of the elevators is really growing significantly when you figure that there's fewer of them with more. I think the statistics show both a remarkable capital investment by the grain industry and an amazing increase in the productivity of our farmers. These people are just doing an incredible job of bringing food, fuel, and fiber to people all over the world.
Tell me again what you said, Randy. You missed me in that first. The average license capacity in thousands of bushels is, how do you read that number again, the 1182.9? That's 1,182,000 bushels is the average size of each elevator?
The average is 1,197,000
okay.
bushels.
That's much easier for me to understand than 1,182,000 okay. bushels.
Last year it was 1,067,000.
Gotcha.
So that... The average number has increased,
as well.
The total bushels has gone up by just about 25,000 bushels.
Yes.
25,000, 25
million.
Million bushels. 25 million bushels.
I'm sorry, I lost track of your question.
The total capacity has gone up 25 million bushels. I think that's as noteworthy as the average capacity going up.
And column two, right, Julie?
Well, I'm looking at the front page, 2015, total license capacity 450.6 million bushels, and last year it was 426.9 million bushels. So it's 24 million bushels.
Well, that's counting the federal licensees.
Well, I guess just from a news standpoint, that's a significant increase
yes.
in total capacity in the state. That's, you know, whether it's federal or state licensed, I realize we don't have control over the federal licensed elevators, but it's still a noteworthy statistic how it's overall increasing.
Interestingly, though, the federal licensees, while they increased from last year to this year, it wasn't by much.
Right.
Most of this increase has been in the state licensees.
I remember a few years ago where we had so much on ground storage, and Sue, is this no ground storage numbers here? This is all locked in, or is there some ground storage here?
It contains ground storage.
Okay.
What I think is interesting about this as well is that it doesn't take into account any of the on-farm storage.
Right, exactly.
So this is just the licensed storage, and we've seen that significant increase just in investment here. We've seen the increase in investment in the rail for transportation and cars and locomotives and everything. So overall, the system just has a lot more capacity to store and transport our ag commodities, and that's going to serve us well for many years to come.
Yeah, it's quite a testament to the productivity of our farmers.
Yeah.
This is needed.
Well, I like how Frank, Sue, and the staff are putting this together, but you go back to 1915, there was over 2,000 elevators in the state. So think about that, you know, how the rural North Dakota has changed from 2,000 elevators, you know, well, actually 100 years ago. To now we've got less than 400 elevators, but the numbers are staggering how much more storage we have. So the the way that the farm fleet of vehicles has changed, the way we farm has changed, and the family, I mean, everything has changed. But the point is that, you know, it's North Dakota is even more productive than it's ever been, and the numbers every year it increases. So that's the story. I agree with you. It's great that not only we're energy producer, we're still a big ag producer. People can't lose sight of that.
And, you know, this is sort of off the subject of our grain elevator statistics, but, you know, a lot of those on-farm storage, you know, if people are able to hold that, it's enormous wealth creation right now, because almost all these grain commodities are very low priced. If these guys are able to hang on a year or two till prices go up, imagine just the overall wealth that is created, because that storage is there and they're able to hold it. Of course, people need the cash flow too, but. Okay, I wasn't really seeking any commission action
That.
But.
Thank you for putting all that together. It
seems like there should be some kind of drum roll or something when you roll this out every year. It's a big deal, right? How much storage we have for ag, I think that's kind of what the energy push. This is kind of lost sight of how important it is, how much storage we have in the state. So we can do just what you're saying, that farmers can ebb and flow when their commodities go to market, that the rail system is in place. I think it's big stuff.
It really is huge.
All right. That concludes your portfolio. Commissioner Kalk, you have two items in yours.
Yes, ma'am. Unless we want to add a third voting item to get some kind of policy on the coffee pot, if you didn't entertain that. But all right, I'll stick with item BK1. Stacy, I'm pretty serious about this coffee business, just so you know. I'm just saying, okay. All right, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the supplemental order issuing third amended corridor certificate number 152 and third amended route permit number 164 and Basin Electric Power Cooperatives 345 KV transmission line Mercer Dunn McKenzie Williams siting application case number PU 11-696.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. In April of 2014, the commission approved corridor certificate 152 and route permit 164 for Basin Electric to build 197 miles of 345 and 230 KV. Since that time, Basin has, of course, continued the construction of what was approved, and they found different areas where they requested slight modifications. In July of this year, Basin filed an amendment requesting a minor corridor and route modification in McKenzie County to relocate one of its structures 75 feet, which actually took it outside the corridor a little bit, to its present location. So by moving this one tower 75 feet to avoid a steep area, they also had to adjust four other towers. So therefore, you know, we put out the notice of potential hearing. No one requested anything back. We've done the work with the State Historical Society has looked at this. There's everything looks good as far as they're concerned. We've reviewed it, and it looks fine. So I appreciate Basin bringing this forward for the route modification and walk it through the process. And just hopefully they can keep building this. And I do appreciate them that when they get out there and look at it on the ground, they make these kind of changes, because we want to make sure we're putting these big towers in the right spot.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK2. I move the commission grant withdrawal of the amended application and cancel the hearing currently scheduled for September 4th, 2015, Antelope Hills Wind Project, LLC, Wind Energy Conversion Facility, Mercer County, siting application, case number PU 14-676.
Second.
Thank you, Randy. I guess the background just on this motion today is we received a request yesterday from the company to basically withdraw their application to amend their approved certificate. We had the hearing scheduled for 9 o'clock this Friday, September 4th, at the Council Chambers, 120 North Central Avenue, Beulah, North Dakota. So for anyone out there listening, I know Stacy's roughed up a press release on this. The commission will not be holding that hearing on Friday because the company has requested that they withdraw their amendment. So it certainly doesn't make sense to go out and hold a hearing on something they no longer want at this time. Now, they previously have a certificate approved for 86 turbines at a max of 172 megawatts. The project cost at that time was $240 million. So what's happened is the commission has approved a certificate for them to develop that facility. They filed with the commission that they had some changes to it. Those changes were significant enough that we were going to go out and do a hearing on their amendment. They've requested that we don't do that. So really, that's the information that I have. So I know our members of the media might have more questions, but quite honestly, they're probably best directed at the company. From my viewpoint, it does become more and more frustrating when these wind developers want something right now, and we really work hard to get out there and make a good decision, and then they don't build things, and then they want something changed, and then they withdraw. I'm glad they did it today, Wednesday, instead of telling us Thursday at 5 o'clock, but we'll certainly not go hold the hearing. But every time you have something like this happen, it just, I don't think it's good for the industry when they're not making good, solid, long-term decisions. And I know my viewpoint is they're probably trying to figure out what's going on with federal production tax credits, but that shouldn't really be coming into play in some of this stuff. It should be developing their projects. But that's me getting off on a rant, I guess. So that's all I have at this time.
Well, I'm sorry.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I will add that I think you're off on a very correct rant. I find this, you said, frustrating. I'll echo that. And, you know, we're charged with seeing through orderly development. And these people rush in, and the sky is always falling. They need everything really promptly. They claim that they have their figures all calculated out, and they figured out, you know, what turbines they should use and where they should be put and all this, and they really need approval quick, and we do it, and a year later, now it turns out it wasn't so well thought out, and they certainly signal to us that it's not as good as it could be because they want to move some things around, but then 2 days before, now they want to change it, do something different because they don't want this hearing. And while if they're not serious about this proposal that we were going to have the hearing about, I'm glad that they're canceling it. But at the same time, while the daily papers do a good job of getting information out to people, a lot of these types of things, when it comes to exactly what meeting you're going to be going to in a couple days, people rely on their local and county papers for a lot of these things. And frankly, it's just too late. The local papers up there come out today, and it's going to be missed. And there's people who, you know, we had a pretty fair turnout of the local landowners at the previous hearing, and I expect some of those have arranged to take Friday off to come and sit through another hearing and find out what the new changes are going to be, and they're going to get there and see a note on the door that we canceled it. And it's kind of unlikely that they're going to go through the daily papers and maybe find that, as they would have, at least if we could have had this, you know, a couple weeks in advance and got it into the papers that we published the meeting notice in. And so these wind developers' inability to come up with a plan that would represent orderly development and then stick to it, I don't know of a better word than the frustrating word that you used, but man, it is really becoming a problem, I think, in the energy industry.
Well, I echo your frustration, both of you, in terms of the short notice. I think it's, though, symptomatic of an industry that has a lot of moving parts, and there is a lot for them to pull together for each and every project. And, you know, I think one thing that will probably take care of this is the changes made in the last session. And these people signed the certification document that requires them to come to us if they move a turbine. Future wind developers won't have to do that. So when they get their certificate, they will be able to make these modifications in the locations of the turbines without consulting us. And so we've all expressed our concerns with that as well. So I think we just need to be a little patient and understand that there's a lot of moving parts in this, and they don't work on our schedule. They work on schedules of finance and everybody else, and so they're following our rules, requiring them to come back and get, you know, have another hearing if they move stuff. They laid out in their letter that they have some engineering challenges, some subsurface conditions, and that were unanticipated, and that they're, you know, doing some more engineering teams work on the project. Also, they're always changing the design based on the turbines. So it is frustrating, but I think it's just an unavoidable part of this industry, and we're involved in it because we have the siting responsibility. So every single time this comes up, I don't think we should be so surprised.
If I could, too, Madam Chair, I think there's a larger issue at play, too, where, you know, we've got a energy production industry that is changing. It used to be where you'd have a company like Basin or MDU or Otter Tail would say, okay, we need this. we're going to go build a wind farm or a coal plant or something, and then they would come in and build it and use the power. Now you've got these third-party energy producers that are trying to make money, so they'll come in and build something, and turnkey it to sell it somewhere, so there's not the commitment like there was in the beginning. It's just the whole energy industry is changing. And with this clean power plant out there, we're going to see more of this. And it may not be a wind farm. It may be a gas peaking plant that somebody wants to come in and develop. So I think we're just going to have to your point, be patient and see how it all plays out. But it is interesting, though, that just the time frame that they want us to make some of these decisions just doesn't seem to hold out. And we've seen, the Courtney wind farm, the same thing where they siting and we turned it over to Xcel Energy, and now they're going to follow it through. So it'll be interesting to see, because I can't remember specifically, but wasn't this power perhaps going to Basin Electric? Can't remember. Jerry is nodding his head. So I think that either we heard that in the hearing. So, you know, Basin has an agreement perhaps with them. So there's a question maybe to follow up if Nick wants more, talk to Basin and see what their thoughts are. But I think the larger issue of we're going to see more of these merchant energy producers in our state and how we're going to deal with this. And I think, to your point, patience and pragmatic, but it's still...
We do need the companies to, if they are thinking about canceling a hearing, I agree with Commissioner Crispin wholeheartedly, we need as much notice as possible so we can minimize the... inconvenience to the public who's going to come and give them as much notice as possible to change their plans and for us to get that word out before somebody drives 45 minutes into town for a meeting that has been canceled. That's really frustrating. So to the extent that we can accomplish that, I think staff also needs to be working with the companies with that in mind as well, that, you know, if you think you're going to be canceling the meeting, let's do it sooner versus later.
Randy, I assume there's a radio station up in Beulah that we can maybe call. We'll send our press release out, but maybe call them and have them run it a few extra times.
It's a possibility. I was just going to add, you know, so often we hear it lamented about the difficulty in acquiring easements for things because of landowner fatigue. Well, you know, just keep having public meetings and things that aren't properly planned and well thought out and aren't what's ultimately going to be built, and then having more public meetings that then at the last minute get canceled and that sort of thing, and it will continue to get worse.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio. Madam Chair, and thank you for the, all of a sudden we've got a free Friday. On the positive side, right?
Exactly.
Plenty to do.
That's right.
All right. That concludes the regular agenda. Look at our calendar and see what's around the corner here. So tomorrow we have a work session on the EPA rules, so we'll get to the three of us sit down and talk about what our thoughts are and how we're going to digest those rules and what our role will be moving forward in the implementation or opposition or all of the above of those rules. The hearing on Friday canceled. Next week, Thursday, we have a formal hearing on a crude oil line in western North Dakota. That hearing is in Watford. Another work session coming up on Dakota Access. Hopefully that one on the 14th will have all of our information in hand that we've been waiting for, and some of the more in-depth analysis of some of the reroutes, and we'll be able to make some decisions on how to move forward with that line and that application. And then later in September, another couple pipeline and telecom hearings. And then at the end of PHMSA, the September 1 meeting I'm looking forward to is our PHMSA semi-annual meeting, where we're bringing some of those folks in to talk to them about their operations in North Dakota and better coordinate with them and their work and us and our work, and identify ways that we can support each other and be up to speed on what their involvement is in North Dakota. So that looks at the month ahead. We have one member of the audience who might have questions, I'll open it up for questions at this point, Nick.
Before we go to questions, mention one thing on the schedule, and I was going to bring this up in scheduling, but in case, I just bring it up in case to make sure Nick hears it too. The September 30th meeting is the same day as the Lignite Energy Council's annual meeting kicks off, and we would normally do a luncheon presentation of the reclamation award. And I don't know if we have an informal hearing scheduled already. If so, maybe if we could avoid it or have it a little later in the afternoon. And also, I don't know their schedule yet as far as exact times, but maybe at our mid-September meeting, if we could look at possibly starting the September 30th meeting a little earlier at 9 or 9:30 or something, kind of see once where we're at with things when I know LEC's schedule a little better.
So we can potentially alter the time a little earlier or something.
I'm thinking that would be enough to,
yep,
to make it all manageable. I don't think we need to postpone it.
Okay. So by the next meeting, maybe you can have the LEC schedule and we can make that decision.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any questions?
Well, yeah, sorry, I was a little late. I guess maybe if I can just get a little bit of an explanation for the first item.
The Highland Crude?
Yeah.
Okay. That is a 4.5-mile conversion. It's an 8-inch crude oil line that's been used as a gathering line. It's constructed, and it's going to be converted into a transmission line because it connects with the Market Center pipeline, which is a large kind of C-shaped pipeline that goes through the Bakken. And it'll be part of that overall transmission project once it's converted. It was constructed as a gathering line, as it is functioning as one today, feeding a tank farm that is north of it. And so this line is in existence. There's no new construction included in this application. It's simply a straight conversion. And the company has applied and asked for us to move on this as quickly as possible. We have an ALJ assigned to conduct this hearing for us on October 7th at Teddy's Residential Suites in Wofford City. And the line, just you're probably interested in that because I didn't mention it, is north and west a bit of Alexander. It originates 5 miles northwest of Alexander at a connection with Highlands Market Center system, and it runs 4.5 miles north of that to Highlands Alexander Station, which is a tank farm. And then from there, it's delivered by truck to various rail and pipeline export outlets currently. In the future, if they get this conversion, there will be the option of having it go south into the Market Center system and out entirely on pipeline, because that connects with, I think, the Double H pipeline that exports into Montana and then south and west from there.
So if the conversion is ultimately approved, it would basically allow more access to those other markets?
By pipe versus having to be trucked and railed.
Was that decision unanimous?
Excuse me?
Did you guys kind of have to vote on that? Or?
Well, this is just a notice of the hearing. Right. So we aren't actually making a decision on granting them the application, the certificate yet. And then you got here just at the tail end of the approval of the Vantage Pipeline. That's the 8-inch.
That was going to be my next thing if I just had a quick little roundup of that one.
Sure. That's an 8-inch, 47-mile ethane pipeline project by Vantage. It will start near Williston and go through Divide and Williams counties and connect into the other Vantage pipeline that exports into Alberta. What's the location of that? It's called the Westbur Lateral Project. I think it connects in near Stady, in Divide County. So it's 47-mile connection line. It goes from this state line gas plant near Williston, owned by One Oak, and will transport liquid ethane to interconnect with that Vantage pipeline that then goes up into Alberta, Canada, and feeds the petrochemical industry there. It's a $20 million project. Capacity will be 30,000 barrels per day. Maximum, the normal capacity will be 26,000 barrels per day. This was a really clean application and hearing. They had 100% of the easements in advance of the hearing. They had consulted and received comments from all the different agencies. The SHPO had agreed with no significant impacts. Game and Fish, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, all of them were on board. And they also were very open to all the reclamation requirements and questions that we asked, and really committed to long-term good reclamation processes. And really, while this project doesn't result in more gas capture, it's a good, important piece of the long-term solution to flaring, because it provides a greater return to producers on the gas that they do capture. So using this ethane for petrochemical industry, the producers get paid more for the natural gas, because this ethane is taken out of it and sold separately from the natural gas. So it's an additional bonus to the producers. North Dakota natural gas, Bakken natural gas, is really high in ethane. And so there is a lot of ethane to support these kinds of projects. And this one is feeding Canada, but you've heard about the projects that have been proposed in North Dakota, of similar type of projects where they'll produce plastics here. And this is the type of thing that we're hoping to see occurring to feed a North Dakota facility down the road, because there's more than enough ethane to go around to feed North Dakota petrochemical industry as well.
Timeline for that?
They want to get it constructed. they have to deliver in 2016 the product up to Alberta, so they'll be getting going with construction as soon as possible, and really hope to even do a bulk of it yet this fall of the surface disturbance. Okay. Thanks, Nick, for coming. You got all the grain stuff, right? You were here for that. All right. Want to take a 10-minute break, come back at 11:15 for the admin portion of the meeting. Mm-hmm.